Blog Talk Radio.
Hello.
How are you there?
I am here.
Okay. All right. I told you this wasn't going to go. I forgot how to do it. I guess we're live. So we're just going to start. Let me just play this room. I had everything.
Well, I was warming up, so go ahead.
Well, no, I we're recording, and people could probably listen to this, but it's like I had everything set up. Because I got a new laptop here, and I had everything set up, but the thing was that because I have a new laptop, I got to reinstall Skype, and it's all convoluted. Anyway, so I'm sitting here, I'm like, I thought I was dialed in, and then the switchboard disappears, and because I'm using that new the new Windows Edge Surfer, whatever it's called, browser, but whatever, we're on. I think people will be able to hear us, so let me just play this real quick. It's been so long. I should formally introduce you. Tonight, I am Chris Block, writer, editor, and keeper of thethirdmainend.com, puckchatter.com. This is Puck Chatter Radio for the first time in a long time. Joining me, and you could probably thank for this show, if you're inclined to thank someone for it, formerly of ESPNChicago.com, but way back in the day, formerly of HockeyIndependent.com, formerly of MyFoxChicago.com, but currently, and in Longstead with SiriusXM NHL Radio, I believe so anyway. Al Simaglia, how you doing tonight, Al?
Yeah, last I heard, I think that's still going. A lot of formalies in there. I just hope someday you don't introduce me as formally. So things are going well. Summer went by pretty quick, and getting ready for hockey. Kind of excited about the new season, really, more so than maybe in the last couple of years because of so many new faces.
It was a turbulent offseason in a lot of ways. Just to clear up some business here before we get going, and I guess we're going to talk about what everyone expects us to talk about. But before we do that, I do want to say I've been pretty quiet this summer, and there's been a lot of different reasons for that. But I wasn't incarcerated or anything. It was just real busy. The site's going. It's going to continue to go. I don't really know how in exact, and when I mean site, I mean thethirdmainend.com. Tonight is kind of, for me, is sort of a, you know, hopefully I'll get going here and motivated and excited to be writing and doing shows like this again. This is the first time, Al, this is the first time I've done a podcast since we did the Tim Sassone tribute show.
Wow, so, I can't even remember how long ago that was.
It was April 1st, yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, we haven't talked. I mean, we don't only have so much time here, and I think I know what's going to take up a lot of it. So, I mean, we're not going to rehash, but yeah, we haven't talked since the playoffs. We haven't talked since the Hawks won their third cup in six seasons. We haven't discussed any of the fallout from the cap shredding and all that, but we can touch base on whatever strikes us tonight. But I just want to clear that up, because I've gotten a lot of emails and stuff and tweets, and I promised some things over the summer, but my summer kind of begun to unravel really the day after the Hawks won the Cup, and most of it's work-related, some of it not. Some of it was just that I just unplugged and I wanted to have fun with my summer, and I did, and now we're back. So now that that's taken care of, Al, the Blackhawks are engaged in preseason right now, and no one's really talking about that. The Blackhawks, as I said, won a Stanley Cup again, first one at home in a half century, and or more than that, I think. And no one's talking about that. Everyone's talking about Patrick Kane. And, you know, I'm going to let you talk. I know you've got a lot of things to say. And, you know, this is one of those things, and a lot of people have emailed me and asked me, like, what, you know, my opinion, and like it even matters. I don't know why it matters. You know, this is something that Patrick Kane and the alleged assault or sexual assault incident that happened allegedly in Buffalo on August 2nd. This is for a couple of different reasons. This one's a little too close for comfort for me. It doesn't mean that I won't talk about it tonight, but I don't think I mentioned the date. It's Friday night, September 25th. We're two wild and crazy guys, Al. after this, I'm hoping to go to going to the casino. I haven't decided which one, but I'm after this. But anyway, we'll talk about it tonight. But that's kind of I guess we'll start off with, you know, it's really an uncomfortable situation in a lot of ways. And I think for a fan or an observer or someone who just happens to really enjoy going to Blackhawks games or getting caught up or just being a part of it, it's turned real ugly here real quick. And that for me was pretty predictable amongst fans and all of that. But I want to start with you, Al, talking about the events of this week, which is really the unraveling of the accuser's case. And shockingly, the unraveling is all due to her mother. Why don't you get us going here with what happened this week?
Well, I mean, I guess shocking. It's such a mess all the way around, you know, a lose-lose situation in a lot of ways. And the news that came out this week, I mean, the first press conference from her attorney, you know, it seemed to me like that was a bit of a reach from someone who doesn't have a legal background. And I just couldn't understand why he went about talking about that situation with the press conference. I would have thought that would have been something you would have sent right to the authorities, hindsight being 20/20. I think if he did that, it would have been a lot, you know, a more attainable situation for his client, although now he's recused himself from the case and stepped away from her, too. I think now, you know, it's very tough sledding for her to come to be able to bring this case forward. You know, I don't know if it's going to get a chance to even go to court. It just seemed like it didn't make a lot of sense on so many different levels. The one thing I wasn't sure of, and I've intentionally not talked a lot about this, haven't tweeted a lot about this, only spoke on the radio once about the case in general, which is fine. I think it's very easy to get too emotional about these things. I think a lot of what's happened, and you were kind of on it early on with the psychology of people, you know, and one thing I did mention on the radio is basically there's two sets of knuckleheads. You know, there's the people that Kane could never have done any of this, and they're blinded by, you know, the fact that he's a tremendous hockey player and one of their heroes on the ice. And then there's the other group, which is turning out to be almost as nauseating, who, you know, is past the point of even thinking that there's any question or doubt whether he did this or not. He's been tried in their eyes, and it just seems like two factions at either end of the spectrum. Very, very easy to look silly with this whole thing as things come out. And now, you know, from what the lawyer said, first part of it was the other day concerning the bag at the mother's door, and for whatever reason, either her own, you know, wanting to protect her daughter, who knows why, just her own ignorance or listening to the wrong people. She seems to have really clustered the whole situation. If there was any chance of having a decent chance of getting some sort of justice, if the event happened according to the way the victim has basically said her side of the story, I guess, as far as pressing charges and looking for a rape charge on Kane. The other side of it is that Kane's lawyer's been professing now for a while that there wasn't any DNA found below the waist of the victim that belonged to Kane, and he had that information a while ago, which I couldn't understand until today, as the district attorney explained why, you know, he was given that information, which I found fascinating in itself. I never thought that was part of this. I thought that wouldn't come up, and that would just be kind of held for information of the district attorney, not to be given back to the lawyers from both sides. But I guess there's some precedent involved whereby when evidence is found to be to the benefit of the person accused, they let him know about it, or let them know about it. So, all in all, it's just a twisted mess, and I don't see, you know, getting back to the original point, I don't see why anyone from Kane's side would have wanted to do anything to mess with this case. You know, the way it stands right now as far as evidence goes, you know, not even to mention the other stories that are coming out, and I don't know where these stories come from, about the other young lady that was in the house that night, how her story is changing, or she doesn't feel comfortable giving her testimony in behalf of the victim. You know, so the case just seems to be unraveling. And like I say, no matter what, you know, I think at the end of the day, whether it goes to trial or not, which it doesn't seem like, or whether it goes to a civil trial or not, I think the same people, many of the same who were dead set against Kane to start with, will end up being that way. They'll be doubters. And on the other end of it, the people that were dead set that he never did anything wrong and that this was a money grab or whatever, they're going to be convinced that they were right. And, you know, it looks to me like we're headed towards a situation that very well could be, at the end of the day, no one will really know except the people that were, you know, present in that room of the alleged attack. So, I don't know. I'm just pretty much sick of it all the way around.
Well, that's just it, though, Al. And you know, it from the very beginning, because of you know, Patrick Kane being a powerful, you know, wealthy person. You know, I mean, in these cases, it's really difficult. You know, because if a person like him, if he did something wrong, or even if he didn't, he might just want it to go away. In situations like this, power and money usually make things go away. And I don't say that because I am leaning towards guilt or innocence. That's usually what happens in these situations. The problem here is that, you know, and it would be in just about any one of these cases, is that there are only two people that know the truth. And unfortunately, both of those individuals, allegedly, presumably, were also drinking that night. So it's quite possible that one of them doesn't even really know the whole truth, too. But there's only two people that really know. And, I mean, how, you know, so you'll never, will we ever know? No, probably not. And the things that happened this week, the accuser's criminal attorney, Thomas Iwanu, and somehow he got fooled. I mean, the whole thing is just so strange. A veteran, a former prosecutor, now a criminal attorney, is supporting this girl, you know, representing her, and he gets fooled by this hoax. He jumps the gun. He does a press conference. He exposes the girl's name, and then, you know, less than 48 hours later, you know, he's off the case. The whole thing is just so strange. I think it was the Chicago Tribune writer today I saw where he referred to Buffalo as the Twilight Zone. And in a lot of ways, you know, I think it is. But, you know, I don't think anything that happened this week, you know, the evidence bag hoax and, you know, the DA today saying that that they trace the plastic bag that was labeled evidence back to the manufacturer, and they believe that it came from the attorney's office. So it's like, well, you know, but they're, you know, the DA is not investigating, you know, the it was really funny to me today. Not funny. None of this about this is funny. And it was really uncomfortable today to see a couple of these, the DA's press conference and Kane's defense attorney, Paul Cambria's press conference. Both of these guys are cracking jokes, you know, by the end of the conference. And it's like, the whole thing is sleazy. The whole thing is just stinks. And, you know, there's real people here involved. If Kane, you know, you can't say that Kane did nothing morally or, you know, wrong that night, because his girlfriend wasn't a part of this. His girlfriend was flying into town 4 days later. But yet Kane was out and bringing girls back to his house at 3 a.m. in the morning on a Saturday night. You know, so it's like, morally, I don't, you know, you can't let Kane off the hook, because at the very least, he's kind of a scumbag. You know,
your point should go to another level. You know, concerning all the vitriol and everything else that, you know, has been spewing on Twitter and every place else, and, you know, talk radio and this and that and the other thing, you know, it's one thing to take up the cause for, you know, victims' rights, and believe me when I say this, you know, and I don't want this taken the wrong way, but no one knows the alleged victim, or 99 and 9/10 of those that are commenting, writing, tweeting, so dead set in their thinking, they don't know this young lady. Nor do the people that are convinced that Kane is innocent, 99 and 9/10 of those people don't know him enough to judge his character or to know enough about him to make a very good case that he could never have done anything like this. The point is that I think we mix up, you know, defending causes and defending a hockey star with the whole thing. I mean, if you want to do something for the benefit of women who are battered and abused, there's good causes out there. You don't need to waste your time sitting on Twitter and getting third-hand legal information that you spit back out like you're a lawyer and comment on things and then put yourself out there where other people spew hate back at you who are in their own right crazy enough to defend something they don't really understand either. I mean, this whole thing back and forth, it's too much. I mean, better time spent, volunteer to a woman's shelter. You know, there's a Constance Morris house in the western suburbs. Go there, spend some time, maybe write a check. Do something in that regard. Souls for Souls. They collect thousands of shoes. You could head up one of those drives. I've been part of those more than once. They give a good portion of those shoes to battered women's shelters. Do something that's productive with your time that makes a difference. You don't know this girl. You even if you want to defend the cause, you don't know her, nor do you know Kane to be able to defend him to any great extent. This isn't a member of your family. I mean, I just think, I don't know, I just think that we've gone to the extreme in general with this whole thing either way. How could the defense attorney, who's supposed to be one of the most highly thought of defense attorneys in that area, how could he not know that in that township, rape kits are put in boxes? How could he not know they're not put in bags, they're put in boxes? How could he not know that? I mean, maybe he's never defended a rape case. He said before he doesn't settle any cases, so maybe he's never had a rape case because most of those cases are settled and don't get the trial. I don't know, maybe. But, I mean, how could that happen? How could the bag come from inside his office that he's presenting at a press conference? It almost seems like it's the worst of every world combined, and what could go wrong has gone wrong. And then you have the other element involved, Chris, where it's Buffalo. It's Kane's town. So there's always the skepticism that there's undue influence there, and there's politics involved, and there's money involved, and which there very well could be. But I mean, is anyone here familiar enough with any of that to really, you know, base a case? I mean, I just think that there's just been so much wasted time with all of this. And at the end of the day, like you said, most likely, never really find out anything. And at the end of the day, there's been a lot of lives damaged, no matter what happened or didn't happen. You know, there's a certain stink that's going to be attached to everyone that's close to that situation. And like I say, it's just a spoiled mess, and I'm really sick of even having to hear much more about it. I tweeted something the other day. It's like a bad Law and Order show. It's you know, you couldn't dream of this. You couldn't dream of the particulars that have come out here in the last week or so. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, some of it is really peculiar. I mean, it's like, okay, the mother was given an evidence bag and told to go home and grab the shirt and send it back. It's like, well, how would that even become an admissible piece of evidence then? I mean, it's like she's going to send.
Maybe you didn't hear that part. What it was is that's a clothes, according to what he said today, and I was wondering about that too. It was a clothing bag. Now, first off, I mean, if you want to start asking questions, you could ask questions all day long with everything here. You know, supposedly she went right to the hospital after this happened. That was the first story that came out. Well, then what you heard today was it was at 9 o'clock or so in the morning. She went home in between time. She changed her shirt for whatever reason. And when she went back to the hospital, supposedly, they asked her, you know, were you wearing this stuff? And she says, well, no, the shirt's at home. So supposedly the mother was with her. They sent the mother home with the bag, put the shirt in the bag. And then the police came to the house to collect the shirt. But evidently they didn't put the shirt in that bag. They put it in something else and left the house. So from the way I gathered, you know, the information that he was giving today, and I wasn't watching TV, I was in the car listening on the radio, but I was listening as carefully as I could. It seemed to me this woman had that bag in her possession pretty much from then. Why they didn't take the bag back from her, I don't know, but she had that bag all along. So, like I say, this is just, it's so bizarre, it's just unreal.
Yeah, you know, I spent some time in Buffalo this summer, and I said to you earlier today when we were talking about doing this tonight, and I said, you know, Buffalo, it's a weird town. It's a big little town is what it is, you know, and they don't have a lot there, and I mean, it's a sports town. I mean, everything about that town, I mean, is sports. It's sports related, and, you know, it's a really weird deal. And you're going back to what you're talking about Twitter and all that. I mean, Twitter is the modern day equivalent of, you know, you sit down at the bar for a couple of drinks and the guy next to you knows everything about everything and he wants to tell you about it. And you realize after a minute or so that he's a complete idiot and full of shit. But you got to sit there and listen to him anyway. Like, well, at least with Twitter, you can walk away. You could put it down at the bar. But that's what it's like. And, you know, once you put it into the sports realm, I think you something like this, you know, this situation, it unravels like a whole different level of craziness because you do have people that can't separate their fandom from real life. You know, I mean, sports fanaticism, I mean, there are books written about it, and I mean, it's basically, sports fanaticism is one rung above mental retardation. I mean, it is. You know, and you have people that they're going to stand by Kane no matter what, and that's fine, but, you know, they're in the process of doing it, they're attacking people and anybody that doesn't, you know, we live in... And part of this is society's issue. We live in a which side are you on society? You know, are you Democrat or Republican? You liberal, you're conservative? Are you pro-choice, are you against? You know, I mean, everything is which side are you on? And when once you get into the sports realm where people can't, like, they can't suspend the layers of their fanaticism, and it's even more intense here in Chicago in this current day and age, because you do have a team that's so successful. You have a player that's so popular. And there are fans that, whether it's consciously or subconsciously, realize that if you take Patrick Kane off this team, that's the end of the dynasty.
Well, yeah, so I mean,
they get
no matter how much the believers want to think that you could trade him for, you know, Steven Stamkos and, you know, Ryan Getzlaf, those trades don't happen. And, you know, it's a whole reconstruction of the team if he goes, because you can't replace him with one player.
Well, hey, Al, we'll talk about this a little bit later, but Marco Dano, as nice of a young prospect he is a step down from Brandon Saad. So it's not like you just, oh, well, you lose all these players and you just plug it in. I mean, it's worked for the Hawks before. There's been a transition. They've gotten lucky in certain cases. But Marco Dano is a step down from Brandon Saad. It might be two steps down from Brandon Saad. You know, and on a Patrick Kane level, that's a whole different thing. And people are really angry that this situation, I think they're at first they're angry at the situation. And then once they start to process it, they start to think, well, he's a rich guy. And I've talked to a lot of people about this, and a lot of people just they jump to that conclusion. Well, he's got all that money, so someone's cheating him. Someone's trying to cheat him out of that. And we don't know. And I think I think for the most part, there are people that are just, they're using this as a platform for, as you said, to, you know, take a stance or, you know, whatever their cause. And then there's the people that are just in the Kane camp, and they're going to attack anybody that isn't just saying, I'm pro-Kane. That's, you know, and that's the end of the day. The people that fall in the middle are somehow branded anti-Kane too. You know, which is, I don't understand that. I think a lot of it is reading and comprehension, and I also think it's just the way that the society is. And once you put, in this realm, sports, and this isn't a Chicago Blackhawks thing, this is a sports thing. Sports fans are the same everywhere you go. And I think Blackhawks fans should be upset that John McDonagh and the NHL made sure that Patrick Kane's in camp, and you have a guy that, whether he did it or not, is there's an ongoing rape investigation, and Chicago Blackhawks fans are cheering a guy who's being openly investigated for rape. You have 15, 16-year-old kids standing up at the Blackhawks game holding up a sign saying they love a guy who potentially, possibly, committed a serious crime. And that is damaging the Blackhawks brand. If you're a Blackhawks fan, you should be upset about that. John McDonagh, and we'll talk about this in a second, but that should have never happened. And the reality is that it's only happening because it is Patrick Kane. Because if Ryan Garbutt was accused of this, he wouldn't be in camp because he's a nobody, and it wouldn't be any skin off Gary Bettman's ass to say, Ryan Garbutt, you just go home and you come back whenever this is taken care of. Being an NHL hockey player is not a right. It's a privilege. And, you know, Patrick Kane cashed a $7 million check on July 1st. He's going to be okay. You know, and you should be angry as a fan that you're being compromised as a Blackhawk fan because this situation is playing out and he's on the ice, and Blackhawks fans, a certain segment of them, feel very uneasy about this.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I would have lost a lot of money because if I was going to bet, I would have bet with both hands that there was no way he would be at camp. One way or the other, he was going to stay away. Now, not to back my way out of what I thought, because I was absolutely wrong, I can connect the dots enough to understand why he was there. But once again, why he was available to answer any questions and then just read a statement is beyond me. I think that when you look at this, you know, in with... from afar a bit, you know, not being right on top of the situation. You brought it up. This isn't a democracy. It's a sports league. Gary Bettman has a lot of latitude. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, the people that say, well, the PA, you know, no, the PA wouldn't have done anything because he could have still been paid. He was being paid. They could have given him some sort of a, you know, he could have been absent, not suspended, on a leave of absence, whatever they wanted to deem as the reason. He could have still been paid. The NHLPA, you know, don't fool yourself, anybody that's all pro-union. The NHLPA is only as strong as the league. This was something to protect the league. Bettman didn't want to make a stance. He backed away, and he threw it all in the Blackhawks' lap with the understanding that they were going to let him come in. And I think, you know, if you would have been a few days before they came out with the roster for camp, I think it would have, you know, if you would have talked to someone on the inside there the week before, I think they would have probably said, no, he's not going to be here. But I think they were put in a position where they didn't have much choice, so they let him come in, and I think it was a last-minute thing, and I think that showed with the press conference. This organization doesn't miss a trick. They don't panic. They're smart people, but they blew it that day, and I think a lot of it was last-minute deal that kind of turned on him. And one of the reasons I think that also is none of Kane's gear or his Blackhawk memorabilia, souvenir wear, whatever you want to call it, was at Notre Dame to be sold the first day. Now, that wasn't because, you know, someone forgot to, you know, pack a few boxes. That was by design because they didn't think he was going to be there. This is me, my opinion. They didn't think he was going to be there. Now, you know, if he's going to be there, you have to sell his stuff. He's on the ice with your colors, your jersey, the logo. He's part of the team. So the only thing that I could think of and piece together is that they thought he wasn't going to be there. They didn't really want him there. Now, what happened in the interim there in that period was in the time that they were probably deciding what they could do and what they wanted to do is they got wind of these DNA results. Because according to Cambria, they've had him for 2 weeks. He said that the other day. He makes no bones about it. He's telling everyone what exactly they were. So maybe that had some influence on, and McDonough made reference to that they were in talks with Kane's legal counsel. So maybe that had something to do with the fact that they went along with him being there. But the point of having him answer questions was really a mistake. And a surprising mistake for them to make because they're buttoned up. You know, this isn't a, you know, by the seat of their pants organization. They plot everything out, and that wasn't good. My thinking is it would have been less of a distraction. He's not going to play most of the games. He's played a ton of games the last few years, as a lot of these guys have. You know, the Hawks monitor these guys as much as they can from afar as to what they're working out, they're doing. They get discs, they get individualized programs that change, they're supposed to keep up, they're tested right when they get here so that, you know, they're supposed to be up to snuff. In the past, there was always enough internal pressure, peer pressure, where someone didn't come in like a fat slop. You don't hear any of that. You don't hear someone coming in being 10 or 15 pounds overweight because, yeah, they might not be killing themselves, but they do enough to keep in shape. They follow the protocol that's set forth. They get their rest in. They do what they need to do. They come into camp pretty much in shape. Not in game shape, but in shape. He probably had more time than he's had before to concentrate just on getting in shape. Because he said he was doing that in his basement. They said that he was in his yard doing whatever. He had nowhere to go. I mean, he couldn't go anywhere.
He couldn't go. He's usually on the ice. I mean,
He wasn't on the ice, but he was working out. Right.
He looked terrible in that first exhibition game. You know, yeah, he set up Daly on the game winner, but he looked terrible in that game. And you know, I mean, there's a lot of excuses why he would look terrible. I'm sure his mind is scatterbrained, and he hadn't been on the ice. But I want to go back to what you were talking about with the press conference at the first day at Notre Dame, and I thought, and I was just with you, we had only talked about this really one time, and this was like a week or 2 weeks after this whole thing came up in August. I was in the same boat as you. I thought there was absolutely no way that the Blackhawks would let him anywhere near camp if this was still ongoing. If this hadn't been settled or hadn't been dismissed or whatever was going to happen in Kane's favor, because obviously it would have to be in Kane's favor, because if it falls out of Kane's favor, then he has to be suspended. The league can't just sit idly by and say, oh, he's, But anyway, I thought when his name was on that roster, I thought the smart play from the Blackhawks standpoint would have been for Kane to show up, read a prepared statement, and say, you know what? Out of respect to my teammates and that I'm a positive, the distraction that all this creates, I'm going to recuse myself from training camp, because the Blackhawks don't need to win training camp, and the Blackhawks will be fine. And, if he joins the team in October or whatever, there's people that would argue, well, if it drags out till January, well, if you're confident that you have these DNA results, and you're confident that this thing is going to fall your way. Now, they couldn't have predicted that the mother would lose her mind, why ever she lost her mind, out of desperation, out of sympathy for her daughter, whatever it was. It couldn't have predicted that. And now it appears that this thing is on the verge of ending, one way or another. But I thought that was the play. Because it would have painted Kane in as good of a light as it possibly could, and it would have. But you're right. To me, allowing him to answer questions was just. And I'm going to say something really nice about or defend John McDonough in a minute here. But to me, that was John McDonough and the PR staff tripping over their own egos, because they believed that if they opened it up to the media and said no legal questions, that the media would be obedient. And maybe they have a reasons to believe that the media would be obedient, but, there was no way that those media members being there in a case like this could sit there and not try to get something out of Kane. That's their job. And if they would have sat there and been obedient, they would all have been fired, right?
So, well, I mean, you know, when it goes beyond, you're not talking about three or four beat writers. You're talking about people that feature writers coming in nationally. I mean, it's, not that the beat writers would have kowtowed and not asked any questions of any relevancy, because they did. But I'm saying, it's a whole different pool of media going to be in Notre Dame that day compared to, the year before.
Right. And I want to defend John McDonough, because I watched that press conference and I don't know, it was a guy from Philadelphia or Buffalo, the whoever asked him the question about if he was tone deaf, and you could see John McDonough, if he could have wrung the guy's neck, he would have. But I felt bad for McDonough, and I've thought about this a lot, because I don't think McDonough's tone deaf at all. If you noticed, they were sitting it with a backdrop that didn't have sponsors on it. Because first of all, I'm sure that McDonough didn't even have to call the sponsors. He just knew that the sponsors aren't going to want any part of this. So they had a backdrop that didn't have Chevy or any of those companies on it. Okay, so that's first of all. He's not tone deaf. Even if he was, the sponsors would have let him know. So there's no way he was tone deaf to that situation. I think he mistakenly, and that whole odd 10-minute prepared statement about how great the organization is and how successful they've been and how work all that, I think he really underestimated how far this is his what the impact of whatever Kane or Kane didn't do, the situation that he put himself in that night to be where they are today. And Kane, at the very least, Kane put himself in a risky situation. or a situation there was no need for him to be in, whether it was an out-of-control libido, whether it was just, you know, that's what he does, and he's never gotten, it's never caught up to him before, and it finally did. I mean, there's a lot of players that cheat on their girlfriends and wives, you know, but you put yourself in that situation, you're putting yourself at risk. Whatever happened that night, okay, and I will never make a judgment on what did or didn't, because I'll never know, and no one listening to this will ever know, because I'm sure Patrick Kane's not listening to this. But whatever happened that night, it's gone so far that the Hawks won a Stanley Cup at home 3 months before that press conference, and nobody wanted to talk about it. Nobody wanted to hear about it. And I think McDonough walked away from that press conference, probably the most depressed person in Chicago, because he realized just how deep this thing runs. And I think he underestimated. I think this is a collective between the NHL and the Blackhawks. Whether it was forced on the Blackhawks or not, I don't know. I'm only speculating. But the decision was made that if they held him out, that would hurt Kane's image more than it would help. And this guy is it's the best U.S.-born player on the planet, or in the United States in hockey. And he's one of the biggest stars in the world. Like I said before, if this was Ryan Garbutt, if it was Andrew Desjardins, he'd be gone until this thing was settled. But it's not. It's Patrick Kane. And when I saw, you know, when fans are cheering Kane, when you got a 16-year-old girl holding up a sign saying, "I still love you, Patrick," you know, that's a point where Rocky Wirtz has to step in. You know, because I saw a lot of people taking shots at John McDonagh, and I don't believe, I'm critical about as anybody of John McDonagh, but I find it very hard to believe that he doesn't understand that this is damaging the Blackhawks brand. I mean, all you have to do is log on to Twitter and scroll for, you know, 5 minutes, and you can see, you know, during those times, the shots that they're taking. And for me, it's not about John McDonagh stepping up and saying, "No, we got to send this guy home until this thing's taken care of. We'll take that risk." It's Rocky Wirtz stepping in and saying, "You know what, Gary Bettman, I don't care what you say. This is hurting my brand. This looks, the optics of this are terrible, and it's poisoning the fan base," which it is. And
well,
if that doesn't happen, then, you know.
I mean, there is, I think we'd have to be naive not to think the NHL has a lot of sway over the situation. It's self-fulfilling at some point. Blackhawks are always on national TV. Blackhawks seem to be almost every year in an outdoor game. There's a number of things. And a lot of that is Gary Bettman has a say in all that. So, you know, I don't know how much, if any, influence, you know, they had. I would think that they were the ones who said, they being the NHL, "This is how we're going to play this. And unless we have reason to believe, you know, reinforce reason to believe that this is going to end in the worst possible way, this is how we're going to try to play it." And I think that they were up in the air about how they were going to handle it until, you know, pretty much that, I don't know if that day, but soon, you know, right before it. Someone, I don't know who it was, but someone said they even cut the labels off the water bottles that were on the table. So, I mean, these aren't dumb people. They understand. Now, the Blackhawks have built up a great deal of currency. I mean, their season ticket list, it might not be as long as Bozo Circus was when I was a kid, but, you know, it's getting up there. It actually may be as long now. Could those people disappear? Yeah, but for the most part, I mean, when this stuff happens to sports figures, and once again, this goes back because they're sports figures. I mean, Mike Tyson went to jail for rape. He sold out the Chicago Theater when he came in to do his stand-up show.
He's beloved.
He's beloved. I mean, in almost every case, these guys go on. Does it hurt them, their own brand, whereby they don't get as many endorsements? Sure. that happens. But as far as being, it's an interesting phenomenon, as far as being attached to the team and pulling down the team, I guess the closest one who's had problems, and more than one problem similar to this, who was kind of the face of the franchise, would be Ben Roethlisberger. And, I mean, he hasn't really missed a beat. You know, he makes more money than ever, and he stayed in place. Now, will that happen with Kane? I wouldn't bet a penny that it'll happen that way with Kane, just because I think now, you know, if you would have asked me 3 months ago, is Patrick Kane going to get traded? I would say no, probably never, unless he really wanted it. Now I think there's a chance at some point, and when that point does happen, I don't think there'll be any horns going off, and, you know, he might be the subject of rumors next summer and everything else, depending on things unfold and how things work out this year. But for the most part, this will happen, a trapdoor will open, and he'll be somewhere else if they've lost trust in him. And some people would say, well, how could they trust him? He's violated their trust before. If he has violated their trust enough whereby they don't trust him at all, I think your point's correct. Then he becomes a problem for the brand. Because if John McDonough, you know, the day after the last game has to sleep with one eye open the whole summer, and people go, oh, you know, well, you got to get someone to watch him. Well, no. There's someone watching him often. You know, when they're local, you know, when they were here, they were out in Byron Elmhurst, in the background was the gentleman who's the head of security when Kane was at the bar with the karaoke. You know, they can't handcuff someone to him. It comes a point where, and this is where he has to take, how could I put it? He has to take responsibility whether he touched that girl or not. The point of the matter is, and this is like nails on the chalkboard for me, and this is like another, you know, like the different cases of people being ignorant to the facts. I don't know why. Okay, one thing that's hit home with him is that he can't drink and drive. You don't ever see that happening. He's never been caught drunk driving or driving under the influence. He never seems, as far as I know, ever drive when he drinks. But there's a common thread that drinking's involved to some degree in these situations. I'll be the first to say that I think the cab driver incident was a lot of trumped up. I had the opportunity to talk to someone who was in the know from the Buffalo Police Department then, and I don't think that situation compares in the least to this, in the least. And nor do I think it compares at all to him being drunk in the middle of a summer on a college campus, in a college campus bar. I mean, that to me was more egregious than the cab driver thing, because that just shows a lack of awareness and stupidity on his part. But the point that I'm getting at is the one flaw that he seems to have, and it's not just him. You hear it, you know, you hear other people say the same that are famous and that didn't have the childhood they wanted to have, whatever that might mean. Michael Jackson, I never had a chance to be a kid. You know, these guys, when they become professional hockey players, they're gone from when they're 14 years old. They're gone. They're not, you know, they're not high school with their buddies. They're not, you know, sneaking beers on Friday nights, you know, during football games and doing things. It's a different way of life. But with that comes the opportunity to do something great, you know, to be a hero, to be someone that people worship, to make a ton of money. So you can't have everything. This stuff about, I just want to be a regular kid, I want to be a regular guy and go out and this and that and the other thing, that's not happening. That's never going to happen. But he seems intent upon that. Now, I'm not saying that you don't go to a bar, you don't go to restaurants, you're not out in public, you take some pictures with people if you want to do that, have a couple of drinks. Do you have to close bars down? Do you have to be there till the end? Do you have to bring people back to your house? There's just an unawareness that is constant almost with him. Everyone's got a Kane story. How many of them are true? I don't know. You know, but everyone's got a story. Does everyone have a Jonathan Toews story? Now, maybe that's comparing him to the opposite end of the spectrum, but the fact of the matter is a lot of players go out and have a few beers and drink and do things. And, you know, this stuff about, Well, you know, the organization punished him with that press conference the same way they did Corey Crawford. No. Corey Crawford, they got out in front of something before it became more than it was. He was out having a few drinks. Was it the reason that he slipped on a step, missed a step, twisted his ankle? Maybe, maybe not. You know, whatever. The fact of the matter is it happens in public. People see it. He had to give an explanation. In this organization, the way to get out in front of things is explain something before you have to, now in the day of cell phone cameras and Twitter and everything else. They made him come up and say so much to defuse the situation. Why? Because he suffered an injury that had nothing to do with hockey, that was going to keep him out for a few weeks. That's why he had a press conference.
Yeah,
this was something totally different.
Yeah, and with Crawford too, and I've had explained to me, I wasn't at the House of Blues, but two different people, one not affiliated, and then one close to Jalmerson, who he was there with at the concert with, and it was just a stupid fluke thing that like you said, it could have been blown out of proportion. It could have made to been something much bigger and more sexier of a story than it really was. It was just something stupid that happened that could have happened to anybody, whether they were drinking or not, but it did happen to him, and they wanted to get out in front of it. That's all that was.
Yeah, it's totally different, but you know, it remains to be seen how this plays out, and you know, how the people that are the main decision makers, Rocky Wirtz and John McDonough, how they feel about him in the future, if they trust him or they think he's a liability. And it's basically what it comes down to, because you know, the fans that don't like him want to, you know, come up with the scenarios that, well, you could trade him and you could get this guy and you could get that guy and you could get this guy. You know what, that would be like lottery like and when you trade someone, like you trade $10 million worth of salary, that's a major reconstruction with your team, because you're probably replacing them with three guys. So those players have to go somewhere. So it's not like we're just going to move him out, you know, save $6 million in the cap and get one $4 million player. No, because they have to defend the situation here. People pay huge money to go to every game. They want to see a product on the ice. So that can't happen either. So it's a very difficult thing for them to do, and it won't be an easy decision at some point. I don't know if they ever come to it. Maybe they won't, but like you said, that would be a game changer. You know, now it's going to be something to see whether all these new guys that they have that are going to be in the lineup, you know, I can make the case that in some ways they're deeper than last year. They may not have the same high-end talent, but they might be deeper in certain spots. But one thing that we don't know, and one of the biggest reasons they keep winning and winning cups, is because they had that winning know-how. You knew what you were going to get from Patrick Sharp. He might not have scored any goals, but he was going to back check. He was going to do everything because he knew what it was like, what was acquired or required of him to win in the playoffs. Same thing with Johnny Oduya. You know, you lose players like that were a big part of things, and Saad too, even though he was a young guy. It remains to be seen if the guys that come in here are going to be able to shoulder the load come April.
Yeah, and I want to wrap up the Patrick Kane part of this. But, you know, I think, too, the optics that although I agreed with everything you said, Al, the optics, too, of what's going on, and we live in a society where people are waiting to be outraged, and when they have that opportunity to be outraged, they pounce on it. That's a lot of what Twitter is. And I think that's a lot of what's happened. But the optics that I was also talking about in this case, and that I think Rocky Wirtz and John McDonough would have to be more aware, maybe aware is the wrong word, but more concerned with, is, you know, in a situation like this, and as sickening as this is to say and think about, I think it's accurate. Sports fans, fanatics, Blackhawks fans, have turned this rape investigation into a sporting event. And it's because they really don't know any other way to process it. And they can't help themselves. You know, you
pick a side and root.
But that's what's happening here, Al. You have people that are rooting for Cain to get off, you know, to be, whether it's to get off, to be exonerated, whatever. They're rooting for it. And there's a harsh reality that crimes like this, sometimes the defendant gets off whether he did it or not. And you have fans that are rooting for, in some of them anyway, that justice isn't served if it needs to be served. And it's sickening, and it's really hard to sit there and process and feel comfortable, you know, with saying, okay, I'm going to turn on the Blackhawks, or I'm going to go to a game tonight, and I'm going to, Saturday night, like I will, and sit next to someone who feels that way. And is going to sit there, because Patrick Kane's going to be on the ice on Saturday night, and express that as they sit next to me. That's a difficult thing as a fan, that because what sports is a release. It's an escape from everyone's everyday life. Some people take it way too far. Their emotions, you know, hinge on whether the team won or lost, whether their favorite player is doing well or not. And I don't understand. I'm aware of it. I don't understand it. I don't identify with it, but it's true. And they've turned this investigation into a sporting event on both sides. And they're actively rooting against the other. And it's just like this week. It's like, okay, the DNA results came out. Okay, and Patrick Kane's DNA evidently wasn't found in and around this girl's vagina. But that does not necessarily mean that assault did not take place. Because if his DNA was there, the narrative would be, well, they, of course it is. They had sex. It was consensual. But he didn't rape her. That's what would be said, right? So, I mean, it doesn't, because it's not there, doesn't necessarily mean that there wasn't something disgusting that happened. It just means that probably there was no penetration. But that doesn't mean that he, you know, and I'm not saying that he did or he didn't. I'm just saying that when the DNA results become public, it's like, oh, well, that's a victory for Patrick Kane. How? Explain that to me. Well, it might be that it's a lesser charge or he did something not as disgusting. But, you know, how is that exact? But that's how it was processed. And then you have this one side that claims victory, and they're cheering, and they're going, you know, they're taking to Twitter message boards to, rail against the people that are even just saying, like I would be saying right now, that if something bad was done here, let's let this process play out and let there be justice had. But that's not what's happening out there in the court of public opinion, where you're allowed to have an opinion. You know, innocent to proven guilty. I mean, if someone listening to this right now goes on Twitter and says, I think Patrick Guilty is a rapist, the cops don't show up at your door and arrest you. You know, and the court of public opinion, and that's another weird thing about what's happened this week, is it was silent for 6 weeks. And then now all of a sudden this thing's being played out in the media, like right out in front of it. There's press conferences every day, and it's probably the mother's fault for whatever reason that she became so desperate. And you could spin it a couple of different ways why she was, but she was desperate, and she did this thing apparently, and it set this thing off in motion. But it's a sporting event. It's become one because the fans have made it one, and it's disgusting. It's disturbing, and to be a party to it is filthy. It makes you feel filthy.
But you know, I think there is a difference, although it's it's degrees of being of bad. I think there's a difference with the rape stuff from the standpoint. First off, let me say this. If this comes out and washes out where Patrick Kane doesn't have to go to trial and isn't subject to any civil proceedings and doesn't have to settle, I mean, those odds are almost unbelievable that could happen. And now, you know, from 30,000 feet away, you'd have to say there's a chance of that. Because, first, you know, the victim in these cases has to have such resolve, especially when it's a high-profile thing. I mean, this girl, you know, you can imagine what people are saying about her and the threats and this and that. So she would have to have tremendous resolve and be, you know, just unreal, you know, as far as her strength to be able to go on to bring it to trial. And then from looking at, you know, Patrick Kane's way of his side, if they went to trial and something comes out in that testimony whereby he violates a moral clause somehow in his contract and they can nix that $85 or $84 million deal, I mean, you know, that's a tremendous price for him to pay beyond the fact of, you know, so it's almost like, you know, he's guilty, he goes to jail, something comes out in the trial, even if he's not guilty, and they try to nix the contract, or he's portrayed as being a scumbag, so he's done as far as any kind of endorsements go, or whatever happens, he's going to get sued again civilly, where the obligation to prove guilt is different, and again subject himself to something else that's going to cost him money. And if none of that happens, and he settles, which the majority of these cases settle, then he's always going to be, you know, he's going to have that attached to his name to some degree. People may forget, but the same people that thought he was guilty from day one, they're not changing just because it settles. And the same people that thought he was innocent from day one, that he could never have done anything wrong, they're not changing their view because he settled. So, I mean, it's just a spoiled mess all the way around. Like I said, so many lives are touched by this and aren't going to be the same by what's happened, no matter what happened.
Yeah, I mean, I would feel, you know, if this is just a case of, you know, whatever the moral, I mean, I doubt very, very seriously that Patrick Kane and his girlfriend Amanda have an open relationship. But if this is a case of he brought this girl back, they were drunk, they started to do something, she didn't like it, and he didn't stop quick enough, and she's blowing this out of proportion, that's a theory. It's just a theory. And his, you know, it's just a case of, you know, a little drunken, you know, tomfoolery, and this, and it's led us here. I would feel bad for him, because you're right. He's in some ways, it's going to take a long time for him to come back from this. And in some people's eyes, he'll always be guilty of rape. And in some people's eyes, he'll always be guilty of being a bad guy, no matter what happened in the house that night. And that's a harsh price to pay if he's truly innocent. And I would feel, some, you know, I, to a certain extent, I'd feel bad for him. But, you know, that's the thing that I just don't get. Like, nobody knows Patrick Kane. You know, these fans don't, and he doesn't give a fuck about any of them, really. You know, I mean, players end up where they end up, and they don't really care where they end up. You know, and fans choose their allegiances by geographical location. They choose their hatred and vitriol of other franchises by, you know, the geographical location, and the players on all those teams aren't from those geographical locations, and it just doesn't make any sense. Nobody gives a fuck about anybody except for, I think, Blackhawks fans, some of them, a portion of them, are really upset that this dynasty is being threatened by this accuser, and I would feel horrible for the accuser if something did happen that night, because speaking from experience, you know, that innocence, that trust that gets raped from you, from you know, someone that has had that assault happen to them, is not fully recoverable. And that's a horrible thing, you know, too. And it's way, way more horrible than anything I can think of. And everyone that comes in contact with a person, a woman that's had that experience, they feel it. And any relationship that comes after it, they feel it. It's omnipresent. You never recover from it. I can tell you that. And I would feel awful for her if it's true. And but the problem here is we don't know and we'll never know, and it's really it because sports fans can't help themselves. It's become a very ugly situation, and it could become even more so just between the fan base. And to me, that's going back to the optics of the thing is when I thought Rocky Wirtz should have stepped in and said, you know what, okay, we're confident that Patrick's going to be off the hook or exonerated, whatever the wording would be, in short order. But you know what, we can handle with being without him for a little while, and it's the right thing to do. And I think that that should have been the call that was made. It wasn't for whatever reason, and you know. It's
a head scratcher. It just is, yeah.
All right, so I want to move forward here in the last little bit. We don't have much time left here. I know you've got to run, and it is Friday night, Al. I think I might have something to do. I don't know. We'll find out. But preseason's 3 games old. The Blackhawks were playing Montreal tonight as we're doing this, but I haven't watched it. I'll watch it tomorrow before I go to the Blues Hawks game at the United Center, but. It seems, just to get the conversation started, that, you know, Jani Haida, who's on a free agent invite in camp here, fighting for a contract, plays for in all 3 games so far. Danny Pae, same way, played in all 3 games. You're getting a lot of Rundblad, you're getting a lot of Vizhnovsky. Any of those names, you know, so far of what you've seen, convinced you that they might make the team?
You know, I watched one game basically in some detail, and that was it. But, you know, I don't know. It's I guess what stood out to me the most wasn't so much individual play, although I like some of what I saw. I like some of what I saw of Dano, although, I mean, he ran into that elbow, you know, the other day, and I think he's got to keep his head up.
Yeah, he's going to run into a lot of those. Yeah,
he's going to. He's not going to last. Anisimov, I was kind of impressed with him from the standpoint that he got to the net, and I'd have to say that overall, that's what struck me. Where they had a lot of bodies at the net, you know, Garbutt and Desjardins and Anisimov was there. Dano was around the net. And I think that's a good thing. I still don't know, and I don't know, you know, what the favor, what the IOU was, how David Rundblad could still be on the team, but he is, and good for him. I mean, he should be in another country playing, and not even in the elite league in Sweden. He should be somewhere, but he's not going to get any better. I highly doubt it. I mean, the game just seems too fast for him. He just has to think too much. He panics. He just not good. So I don't know, you know, if he fits into the top 6 anywhere. I think I would be surprised, except spotted once in a while, or maybe if there's an injury. But I have to believe that, you know, Haida, Vizhnovsky, you're better off with one of them than him. But, you know, for whatever reason, that's not the case. They signed him for 2 years. So I still think, offensively, I think they're going to score goals. And barring bad injuries, they should be right back, you know, ready to compete come the playoffs again, I would think. But what I'm anxious to see is how the defense shakes out. Trevor Daly's not Johnny Oduya. There's things about Daly's game that are interesting. I think he could help on the power play, and maybe that's enough. I don't know if he's etched in stone to be a top 4 guy. I'm anxious to see what Rundblad is. There was a small sample of him last year. I know he doesn't have the quickest first step. His feet aren't that great. He can't seem to. The biggest thing is he can't seem to stay healthy. He keeps getting hurt. So that's going to be an interesting one for me to watch, because I think that in some ways he's a key, because if he could be effective in his own zone, and Quenneville trusts him, I think that he could go into the top four as being the fourth defenseman. And if that happens, then the Hawks could have a very good third pairing. And Daly could be part of that, and he could play on the power play. And every time the Hawks have won the Stanley Cup, they've had a very good third pairing. And at least a very good number five. And you know, they got Roosevelt back, and I know some people didn't like that signing. They want him to go with young guys. That's not the MO here. They don't go with young defensemen. They don't teach them up here. There hasn't been a young defenseman that's developed for any length of time, and he wasn't even there that long, maybe about a half a year or a little bit more, in Rockford. And that was Nicklas Hjalmarsson, and that was almost, what, 8-9 years ago? You know better than me. But outside of that, young defensemen don't seem to come up from Rockford who have played there for any length of time and have done well. That's not in the game plan here. And it hurts them in some regard because they have to pay, you know, defensemen to come in on the third pairing. But like for this year, you know, they're not going to pay a third pairing defenseman $2 million.
Well,
that's not going to be the case.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to bring of what they have left. I mean, it was disappointing that Stan Bowman or the organization as a whole, you know, and how they set the price for Patrick Sharp, that they've got basically backed into a corner by Jim Nill, who has said, like, that deal doesn't happen if Stephen Johns isn't in it. Stephen Johns on that, you know, he's on that cusp of being an NHL player. It's disappointing, but the reality is, for, you know, if you're looking at it to in defense of the Blackhawks, is they already love Trevor Van Riemsdyk. And so you're going to have Van Riemsdyk there. You know that Joe Quenneville doesn't like to have a lot of young guys all at once in the lineup. And, you know, there's a case to be made to support the, you know, his mentality there. But of what's left, Ville Poka's not ready. Victor Svedberg is, I mean, he's getting a long look here in camp, but I think that'll end with this game three in Montreal. He's tall. He's okay. But he's just – the one thing I will say for Rundblad, and I'm not a Rundblad fan, but when you isolate and just watch Vishnovsky and you know, – Vishnovsky I haven't been impressed with. Yanni Haiti's been okay, and I think he'll get a contract. But when you isolate Poka, when you isolate Svedberg, you know, you really see – like Rundblad plays the game a half step quicker than those guys. The problem with Rundblad is he's so absent-minded, and that's where he falls. You know, he's not that great of a passer either. His passes are off.
No.
Yeah, but
he puck watches a lot. He gets caught out of position. He just even though, like you say, a half step faster than those guys, but those guys shouldn't be in the league either. You know, so it's
and they won't be. So like it'll be, and even Gustafson was the other guy I was thinking of. Gustafson, you know, Rundblad's a half.
Yeah, what did you think of him?
I wasn't really that impressed by him. I thought, you know, he's okay. I mean, he's just another one of those guys like a Dahlbeck. He's solid, but he doesn't do anything spectacular. You know, there's no one part of his game that really stands out to you and says, "Wow, that's NHL level right there," or that could be NHL level. And that's, you know, as much as I like Klaus Dahlbeck, that's why I understood why the Blackhawks moved on from him. And I look at Gustafson the same way. Not as big of a player as Dahlbeck at all. But, yeah, there's nothing really there that impresses me too much. And we'll see him in Rockford. I mean, he'll get a chance in Rockford. Ville Poka is just still a little raw right now. There's a lot to like about him, but it's still a little raw. I mean, he'll do one thing, you know, make a nice play in the offensive zone, and then he'll be standing in the D zone. Guy will walk right past him, right to the, you know, right to the net.
But he's very young. Still, he's still very young. Yeah, I mean, he's still very, very young, and you know, it's, you know, I think what people don't realize is the reason that these cups happened was because one of the reasons is because Seabrook and Keith were in place when the team got good. They already went through their growing pains. By their own resolve and through some good coaching, they didn't get broken down by being on bad teams and playing big minutes. And they were able to, you know, to shelter Seabrook somewhat in the beginning. He didn't really have any time to speak of in Rockford.
Those guys were Norfolk guys, but yeah,
in the AHL, Seabrook had three games or something.
Yeah, the point to be made with those guys is that they're, and it's a good point that you made. I mean, they persevered through some bad times. They're special. They're special players. And
they're very, very good. Right.
You don't necessarily cultivate special players. Some players are just, they're built mentally, physically, and I mean they're able to get through that. They're able to take care of themselves when maybe the coaching isn't so great, you know. And those guys went through some of those times. They were in the minors when it was just Trent Yawney doing his thing all by himself, you know, and
yep.
Mike Havoc, you know. So, I mean, there was no assistance in there. And they did see Ted Dent as an assistant with Mike Haviland, but, you know, or Seabrook did at least. You just don't bring those guys along like it's a formula. Why was Jeremy Morin put on waivers today? You know, I mean, this is a guy that when you know, he gets going can tear up the minor league, but he just can't get it going in the pro league. A lot of it with Morin is mental. You know, he's got he's got the skill, he's got the ability, but he can't make it happen. You know, just because guys have skill, just because guys look like, wow, that guy could be a player, they don't make it, and a lot of it is mental. And
a lot of it's mental, a lot of it's luck, too, that they don't suffer any injuries that set them back. I mean, Seabrook played three games in Norfolk. That's it. You know, he grew into a horse. Even when he's been hurt, he comes back quickly. The other guy is just, you know, a supreme athlete that, you know, being undersized or whatever, he learned how to play the game. I mean, those are rare cases. But when you look at this and you break, and then you got Jalmerson, who they wind up getting lucky to get, good drafting, good everything, didn't need to spend much time in Rockford, didn't really do, I'm not saying it didn't do him any good, but, you know, he developed here, was able to come in, and he's one of the most underrated players in the league. So when you got those three guys, and then you supplant with another Johnny Oduya, who you make a very good acquisition on, who plays his best hockey ever here, you don't really have to worry about bringing players up from underneath, and you have a coach that from Rockford, you don't really need to develop anyone because you could get someone for the most part to be on that third pairing, and they had Letty for a while till they couldn't pay him, and they had Roosevelt, and before that they always had someone who seemed to be good enough to do what they needed to do. And when you look at it this year, Chris, I mean, Van Riemsdyk, unless injured, is going to be on the roster. Roosevelt is not going to be in Rockford. He's going to be on the roster. So that, you know, so, I mean, the way I count, that's seven guys. You know, especially Rundblad's on a one-way contract, isn't he?
Yeah. I think you're right.
You're only paying him $1 million, so really, you know, it doesn't matter all that much. But you know what I'm saying? So, to me, maybe they sign Hayda and he splits his time in Rockford, or maybe they carry eight defensemen like they did in the beginning of the season last year.
They could carry eight, especially since Roosevelt is coming off a very severe injury. But I think the other thing this is just my read on it, just the fact that you're seeing Hayda in the first three games, and I don't like to take a lot away from the first week of exhibition games just because, you know, it's a weird time where the guys that aren't as good, or the guys that need to, they really need to put on a good showing to put themselves either on the roster or at the head of the pack for the first recalls. Those guys come into camp energized, in better shape sometimes, and they're just more engaged than, you know, the other guys that they know they have a spot, and they're looking to peak on October 7th. Not September 25th, which is what guys that are competing for a job, they have to peak on September 22nd, 23rd, 25th. That's when.
Otherwise, they won't be around. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
So I don't like to take a lot out of the first week of camp. I think we see a lot of nonsense said about certain players and how good they look, and it's like you got to take all of this with a grain, you know, and really evaluate this for what it is. And And I think that that's got to be taken into account. But when I my read on what's going on this week is that Yanni Haida is being given every opportunity to make this team. And Yanni Haida was a good, it has been a good NHL player for a long time, but now he's 38 years old. But he's being given every opportunity. And I think that Rundblad, this is my read, and I could be totally wrong because Stan Bowman has been defiant about David Rundblad, but I think Rundblad's playing for a spot. And I think it could be that he gets thrown on waivers if Yanni Haida, because you got Yanni Haida's a left shot. Roosevelt, Van Riemsdyk, Rundblad, all right shots. So I really think that one of the reasons why we've seen so much Rundblad, my read on it, my opinion only, is that he's playing for a spot.
Yeah, that could very well be. I mean, you know, basically, Vyshnovsky and Haida are about the same, 37, 38. Yeah, and I mean, it would be no surprise to have someone like that come in. I mean, it just wouldn't. I just don't. Yeah, to me, Rundblad doesn't fit on a very good team, and in some ways, I mean, I don't see him really fitting to any great length in the NHL, but. That's me. I mean, he's got some ability. He's got a real nice shot, you know, and when he could be spotted here and there, yeah, but he's a luxury item, and he's not getting paid that much money. I get it. But, you know, with the other changes and everything, I think one constant that, you know, they would like to have, and I think one of the reasons why, for however good he's going to be this year, and then last year there were times where he wasn't very good at all, that's one of the reasons Roosevelt's back, you know, at the minimum, basically, you know, could you have gotten anyone better for $600,000? I'd take my chances with him as long as the doctors tell you he should be okay at some point. And that point might not be on October 7th. It might be on December 7th, but so what, you know? So, yeah, it should be an interesting year. I think the Van Riemsdyk thing's kind of one of those deals where I'm watching that more closely because I think that tips the balance. You know, that gives you a bottom third pairing, and it gives you a guy that could be a power play specialist. And I think Daly would be better suited if he's not slotted too high. I think that hurt him in Dallas probably. I think that, you know, on the third pair, he's probably okay. He's probably fine. He won't make you that nervous. Quenneville does a good job of spotting those guys. And the other thing is Anisimov, where does he fit in exactly? You know, I know that everybody that they talked about in the last few years about being a second-line center, they haven't turned out to be a second-line center. Whoever was talked about in the summer, whether it was Patrick Kane or whoever else, they didn't turn out to be a second-line center. And, you know, right away they pencil him in and as, well, here we got our second-line center. Well, you know, from what I see, and I haven't watched him in 100 games, but from what I see of him, what he's done in the past tells me he's better suited to be a third-line center. Which is fine. More than fine. And he's very good defensively. He's a bigger guy. The other question on the other side of the coin, being offensively, is where does Tara Vinen play? And that's going to be interesting, too. So I think that if he winds up being the second-line center, it could be a very interesting year. No matter what, it's going to be a very interesting year. And in a lot of ways, there's more to look forward here.
They re-signed Anisimov for 5 more years.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing that worries, I like Anisimov as a player. I don't like him enough to jump the gun and give him a 5-year contract extension when he still has a year left on his deal. I see it. I don't draw this conclusion just yet, but I see it turning out the same way Brian Bickle, where, you know, in a year or two, Anisimov's kind of in the way. You know, and I guess, you know, he's not old enough to where it's an untradeable contract, but still, it's just like that was the thing in the off season that really boggled my mind. It was like the rush I get it. If you're confident that he's a second line center and all these questions are ridiculous and the people that should know better do know better and he is that guy, okay. But still, I don't know. I've watched enough Anisimov and he's bounced around enough that I just question that. I don't, you know, maybe he could be a second-line center permanently in a lot of places, but Chicago, is a special place, and I don't know that he's that guy, that he's that much better than all these guys that didn't cut it before him. I don't know.
Well, I think my thinking is he may be paid like a second line center, but I think he's going to be a very good third line center. And that may be out of whack somewhat, but he's going to be that big center, you know, that kind of like Vermette, that they need in the playoffs to match up against the teams that have size down the middle, and he's good defensively. I was very interested in him when he came up with the Rangers, and I think that kind of maybe what happened with him is I think that he had a lot of skill, and it seemed like he was going to be a scorer. And for the most part, you know, that didn't really materialize, you know. And I think that, you know, he's just maybe not that type of player. I mean, he's only scored 20 goals one time, 22 goals. That's a season high. So, you know, I think he better fits in as a third-line center, and that means that you still don't have a second-line center, but maybe it's Teräväinen. But I think one of the reasons, and this is just spitballing, but I think Stan Bowman did a real nice job with the Saad trade from the standpoint that look at the alternative. He was going to lose them. He was able to manufacture a trade with a team where he got a couple of players. Stano's an interesting player. Is he someone that's going to be as good as a lot of people think? I don't know. But if they could come away with it and get two top nine forwards for Saad when the alternative was to get draft picks, I think he's done very well. So, you know, I think that maybe part of getting Anisimov here might have been, hey, you know, come on, we're going to re-sign you. You know, maybe something along those lines. I don't know how much of that could be talked about before a trade is consummated, but I have a feeling that it can be, and it is. And he got him to pay the number. He was in the right place at the right time, and he got paid. But, there's a lot of things that he does well that a Joel Quenneville will like. You know, he's very responsible defensively. I think that's a big deal. And Quenneville could utilize a player like that. And especially if he goes to the, you know, goes to the net, sticks his butt in there. He's a pretty big guy. So he'd be interesting to watch. Teräväinen, I mean, he's a player. He's going to be a player. Just a matter of how good he is. What I see, he's got a lot of skill. He's got the hands. Question is, where does he play? At least that's a question that I have going into the year.
All right, Al, I think we did a good job here, and I think we should be in agreement that we should do this again either next week or the following week before the opener.
It sounds like a plan.
We're hopefully we won't spend an hour talking about the Patrick Kane case. So
Hopefully not more than 10 minutes, but
yeah,
we'll have to see how things turn out.
All right, I'm sure Al on Twitter, at Al Simaglia, will keep you in touch. If you follow him there, you can know where to listen and when to listen to him on XM Radio. And I know that you tweet out the archived audio of that whenever you're on. So that's the place to see Al or hear Al, keep track of Al. Al has thoughts on Twitter, unlike some of us other people. And yeah, I guess I'm going to get it kickstarted here pretty soon. I'm going to have to start authoring my thoughts. And Rockford opens up training camp on Sunday. They've got their first preseason game, or one of them, on October 1st. And then the season starts out in California. Their only trip to California this year, two games right off the bat. They don't play all those California AHL teams. Imbalanced schedule. It's crazy. It makes no sense. But that's when the league doesn't make money, that's what you got to do, I guess. Al and I will figure that out when we'll return. Until then, thanks again for joining me, Al. And thanks, everybody,
pleasure.
For listening. Thanks, everybody, for listening. TheThirdManIn.com, PuckChatter.com, and where you're listening. You listen a lot of different ways, my understanding. But BlogTalkRadio.com/TheThirdManIn. You can catch the RSS feed, whatever podcast catcher you use. You get the RSS there. Everybody, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Good night, everybody.